B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Make a great sports talk radio show work. You got to know when to talk.
Did you take anything specifically away from that game?
And when to listen?
What did we really learn about this team yesterday?
John, that is the exact question Rich just asked.
Thanks.
Is that right?
For listening.
How did I miss that?
To Toucher and Rich on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, Tim McCone, Ty Anderson, Alex Barth, you're with you on this Tuesday. Ty, I was with Alex all day yesterday, or at least yesterday morning. I spent a ton of time on the Patriots. I just wanted to quickly get your reaction, first of all, coming off of that loss against Buffalo.
Well, Buffalo played a near-perfect game, I thought. Josh Allen, almost no mistakes, and the one that he did give you, J.C. Jackson dropped.
Yeah.
So that was a problem. I don't know if Buffalo has another game like that in their system, because that was really just a masterful job, right? Like even that fourth and two that they convert. I mean, that move he makes, right? That juke. I mean, he can make that move, right? But like, just everything went Buffalo's way in that game. A bit of a problem for me, the game plan of, you know, how are you still getting beat by what's effectively their number five receiver, right? Their number five passing
Isaiah
threat.
McKenzie, yeah.
I mean, he was just killing you all game. And so that's frustrating. But ultimately, I don't feel like the doom and gloom that I've been reading and seeing. I just don't feel it, because at the end of the day, I mean, you had a chance in the fourth quarter. If J.C. Jackson does what he's done all season long, maybe win that game. It's entirely possible. So I still like where they are. I still think this season is a success. Granted, I'm assuming they don't lose the final two games and completely miss the playoffs.
Yeah, that'll change things, yeah.
But I still feel better than I thought I would in August right now than I do.
So this is something we talked about yesterday, and I think this is the big picture question here. Can the season be a success and disappointing at the same time? And I think it can, because – and this is something I said back in August – the way this team is built, and it's essentially you're looking at a four-year window with the rebuild, right? This is year one of a four-year window. This year was essentially one long preseason. Guys got to get used to playing together. They got to get used to playing in New England. Mac Jones has to learn the NFL, all of that. So realistically, they should have been about a 9-10 win team. Those Buffalo games needed to be competitive. They ultimately were, like, they mattered, and they should get a wild card spot. That was the, you know, where they should be. Realistic best case scenario coming into the season, they're going to hit that. At the same time, the way they got there, you win seven straight, you iron out a lot of things that were going wrong early in the year, and then to make rookie mistakes late in the season, and Bill Belichick likes to say there's no rookies when you get to this time of the year, that hurts, because it does feel like they left something on the table. So I know it's not easy to swallow, because people don't want to do the nuance. They want this team's great or this team's terrible, and I get it. I get, you know, you want to react emotionally, but it can be a little bit of both. I think in the micro, it is a little bit disappointing that they went from the one seed to now potentially a wild card team in the span of 2 weeks, especially the way they look, just, you know, getting out, you know, being a less physical team after being more physical for 3 months. But at the same time, you look at the growth Mac Jones has showed throughout the season. You look at the way a guy like Kendrick Bourne has evolved in their offense, the way a guy like Jalen Mills has evolved in this team's scheme defensively. There's not, like, how many holes were there heading into last season? Pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
How many holes are there now? There's some. They have needs. They're going to need a tackle. They're going to need a corner. They're going to need a middle linebacker. They're going to need a receiver. And we'll see what happens with Devin McCourty. If he sticks around, they might need a safety. That sounds like a lot. It's actually pretty manageable given where they're at. So if this year, again, to go back to my main point, if this year was essentially one long preseason, it's a pretty successful preseason by all accounts.
Yeah, and for me, I just... I look at that game, right? Like, they're down Stevenson. They're down Aguilar. Bourne misses basically the entire week because he's on COVID list. Like, Hunter Henry really wasn't a factor at all in this game. Like, and still, you were in it, right? So, right. And to your point, this is a year of discovery, right? Like, I think this is more a year of like, okay, this is a good start, but what do we need now? Like, they definitely need offensive line help. I mean, Mac, I mean, this is watching him as this goes on. I mean, it feels like he has less time to throw the ball every week. Like, it feels like that's been an issue. That's becoming an issue. But ultimately, I think they answer the biggest question of all this year. They have a quarterback now.
Right.
We're not sitting here going, well, they can get Marcus Mariota. Like, last year was hell, right? You have Cam Newton, and you're looking at options. You're saying, okay, well, you can bring in Andy Dalton, maybe if he's right. willing to come here. Like,
yeah.
They answered the biggest thing, right? They proved that the quarterbacks, they have a quarterback, and the coach can still find talent. So those are the two biggest things in the NFL. If you don't have either one of those, you're lost. Look at half of teams that have been terrible for half a decade now. So I think that they answered the biggest question this year. So that makes this season, again, barring a lose-out situation, a success for me.
Yeah, if you look at, when I talk about, you know, four-year window, first year, what you really want to check off in that first year on a rebuild, you got to have cornerstones. You know, do you have your cornerstones in place? And I think at the true impact positions, do they have a quarterback? Yes. Is he the best quarterback in the league? No, but you can win with him.
Jonnu Smith, N'Keal Harry. Check.
Well, so
check.
I'll get to them in a second. I think, do you have a quarterback? Yes, you do. Do you have a corner? Assuming they at least franchise tag J.C. Jackson, which I think they will. Yeah, he's the number one corner. Again, he's not the best corner in the league, but I think he's a guy you can win with. Do you have an elite pass rusher? I believe they do in Matt Judon, and they have him locked up here for the next couple years. I think the cornerstones they still need to add are a left tackle, and I like this tackle draft, by the way. I do. Darian Kennard, Kentucky. You can look him up. And do they have that explosive playmaker on offense? I'll say maybe, because I think there's a chance Ramondre Stevenson can turn into that guy. I honestly think there's a chance with another year in the system, maybe Kendrick Bourne becomes that guy. And even if not, they still have opportunity to go add those guys, whether it's in free agency. And I don't love this free agency wide receiver class. It's another good wide receiver class in the draft. And I know Patriots fans cringe when they hear that.
Yeah.
Because you know, and look, it is a risk. I'm not going to say that they're just going to hit on the guy. But, and I know nobody around here listens to watches college football, so these names mean nothing. But Jahan Dotson declared for the draft yesterday, Penn State. Drake London, USC, he's probably going to declare. There's guys who are there. So that's, you know, that's exciting to me. And in terms of the game, I think Ty hit on something that's gone really under the radar, but it's a really good point. You talked about Nelson Aguilar not playing. I think that game showed us how important Nelson Aguilar is to this team. And I don't necessarily mean in terms of his box score production, but when Nelson Aguilar is on the field, teams have to respect the Patriots throwing the ball deep.
Yeah.
They just have to. And with him not out there, and you have N'Keal Harry out there at the X, there were snaps where the Patriots are in 22 or they're in bunch, and N'Keal Harry's the only receiver away from the formation. And the Bills, they had one-on-one press on the outside with N'Keal Harry, daring him to run a go route, and they just put 10 guys in the box. And they blitz six, and you just can't operate like that offensively. It allowed them to bring an extra safety in, help on Hunter Henry. That's why, you know, Hunter Henry didn't produce. I think his lack in production is tied into Nelson Aguilar not playing. So whether it is Aguilar or whether it's somebody else next year, they need to make sure that that deep threat is in place and they have that guy who makes the opposing defense play honest.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest, like, I think to unlock max full potential, you need to have threats all over the field, right? And I think right now it's I think a part of this offseason was mainly with the idea, okay, Cam's the quarterback, so we can't really get a lot of playmakers here. We gotta target these 5 to 10 yard plays and hope we can get some yak, you
yeah.
know, on the table. Jonnu Smith is a signing that speaks to that. Kendrick Bourne, I talked about this over the summer. Like, he's a guy who in San Fran basically only caught first downs. Like, he converted first downs at an extremely high clip. So now it's about finding, like, again, you're talking about that next great playmaker. So how do you get it? I mean, the draft is probably their best bet. It's going to require them turning their luck around on that front,
yeah.
But maybe they can just throw a bunch of money at the Steelers, whoever the Steelers have, who scouts their wideouts, and just be like, just please come here and help us for 1 year, and then you can go back to Pittsburgh. Like, it's totally fine. We just need your expertise for one season, please.
It wouldn't be a bad play. I do look at it, and Barth, do you think just maybe even like going out and trying to acquire someone through trade that's already established in the NFL might be a play for him as well? Because you know, you kind of look at the history of the Patriots. When they are scouting and trying to identify players that are already in the NFL and maybe underutilized a little bit, it feels like they hit a lot more frequently on that than they do through trade. And you said the wide receiver free agency class is not strong this year. Who's kind of at the top of the list? Do you know off the top of your head?
Is Allen Robinson.
Yeah.
Who, like, is a good player, but he's 29. He's not, and this isn't necessarily a knock on him. I think there's guys who can be great players without a super diverse route tree, but just you got to have a solid number two in order to do that. I think a trade's possible. It's kind of too early to tell who's going to be up. The problem is, every time there's a big name receiver demanding a trade, it's Odell Beckham. So, you know, what can you do with that? Like, if Justin Jefferson wants to force his way out of Minnesota, yeah, you call him. The whole, like, hey, can they find someone who's underutilized? I think they got that guy. That's Kendrick Bourne. I really think they have something in him. I think he's a really, really good number two receiver. Maybe he can be a number one. Like, I wouldn't, you know, this is if he's doing this just 1 year in the system, but they need the Brandon Cooks trade again. That's what they need. They need to go out and get a guy who can put up. It's not even catches. Like, they could improve in the slot too, but they need a guy who is a threat to give him 1,400 yards. They need that, you know, and it's going to help Mac too. So I don't know. Maybe it is Beckham. I don't know, but they got to go out and they get that sort of player. And those guys generally don't just become available via trade.
What about Godwin?
So Godwin's an interesting one. The knee injury is kind of why I have pause. Like, let's see what that is. But yeah, I'd actually probably rank Godwin if he's healthy ahead of Robinson. So Godwin to me would be ideal if he's healthy. But that knee injury just looked really ugly to me.
Perfect buy low candidate, baby.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Speaks to the Patriots. No question about that. All right, 617-779-0985, the telephone number. Going to keep the Patriots conversation going with you and your phone calls after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
They get you going. They get you going every day.
Worse than me. Way worse than me.
Toucher and Rich.
And I don't look good.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, 617-779-0985, the telephone number. Tim McCone, Ty Anderson, Alex Barth, talking Patriots with you guys. And kind of big picture stuff here now as we kind of come to an end with this regular season so far. And Barth, I thought you brought up a good point yesterday and today in that it's kind of a success and also a bit of a disappointment at this stage too, because similar to we were talking Celtics first hour, what felt like 2019, where maybe you're ahead of schedule a little bit, but the path seemed like it opened up for maybe a potential run here. And after these last two games for the Patriots, it's pretty obvious that they're not going to get the number one seed anymore, Ty. And it looks like the AFC East, barring a absolute collapse, because who do the Bills have left now?
Falcons and Jets. Go Falcons.
Falcons, Sticky, by the way, have 7 wins this year.
They got their first home win over the weekend, which I don't know how
that's possible. 7 wins. That's crazy.
Because they have a good quarterback. They have a top half of the league quarterback, and that'll just default you into wins.
Yeah, it's just not a lot of talent there. Your number one receiver was like, hey, I'm actually good for this year.
Hey, Cordarrelle Patterson, Patriots legend. Careful what you say about him.
That's true. That's a fair point, yeah.
I saw, I don't mean to like throw bombs at other media members, but I think it was Bill Simmons said, he's like, how come the Patriots didn't try Cordarrelle Patterson at running back? And I was like,
are you serious?
Bozo. They're the first team that tried
that
him at running back.
Yeah. Noted Patriots fan Bill Simmons.
Yeah. So I could see, I don't know. I could see it's Buffalo, right? And I'm at the point with Buffalo where like I could see them completely pooping their pants because like that's what they're known to do.
I mean, it's kind of set up for it a little bit, right? You come off that huge win against New England and then, yeah, maybe But it's in Buffalo. Like I don't know. It's tough. That would be a brutal collapse.
Which is kind of on brand. Home win the Falcons, so they're clearly a better road team.
They are. And I will say this. I don't want to root for this. If you're a Patriots fan, you might want to be rooting for Cole Beasley to be like coughing on everybody and touching everyone's things. Like because maybe that evens the playing field a little bit. I'm not saying biochemical warfare here. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. If Josh Allen has to miss a game, I mean that does help you quite a bit in terms of the AFC East race.
It does.
Well, they got Trubisky, so the MVP,
Trubisky business.
Come in and, yeah,
I didn't even know he was there.
He's their backup. Yeah, so careful what you wish for, I guess. Yeah, I mean it's still possible, but it doesn't feel like that's going to be a tough game against the Dolphins in Week 18 because the Dolphins are now playing for a playoff spot. Like if
they
win
out, isn't it?
Yeah, if they win out, they make the playoffs and. I think they can potentially still lose that game to the Patriots and make it, but I don't know. Like, I'd be interested. This is an Elia Sports thing. If a division has ever had two teams go on 7-game winning streaks and neither of those teams win the division, because that could happen. That could very well happen in the AFC. The Patriots won 7 straight, obviously. The Dolphins have now won 8 straight after starting 1-7.
1-7, yeah.
Right, and neither team is probably going to win the division, which is, I mean, that to me almost perfectly encapsulates just how weird the AFC has been this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm still not sold on Miami because I'm not sold on Tua. That's kind of where I'm at with that. And their running game is I don't know. I'm still watching them last night. I'm like, cool, you beat up on a bad New Orleans team. Like that team stinks. Ian Book, I that should be his only NFL start. Like, he's not good.
It's one NFL start too many for him.
He's just not. I couldn't believe how awful he was playing all game.
I tried to warn
Didn't him. Get better at any point. He's like, I'm going to hold on to the ball for 30 seconds. I'm going to see if I get tackled. Oh, I'm getting tackled again. All right. I'm going to hold it for 40 seconds now. Let's see if I get tackled. It's just unbelievable. So I'm still not sold on Miami. I'm not sold on anybody. Like, this is not a good league. Like, I feel comfortable saying this now that you have, like, 4 or 5 good teams. And everyone else is any given Sunday.
Yeah.
It's truly like to that point where the only teams I believe in right now are, it's probably Kansas City, Tampa Bay, LA. I'm not even sure if I believe in them right now with Darrell Henderson being out. They lose Robert Woods, obviously. Matt Stafford, what, one career playoff game? Like, can you really buy in on them at the same time? So I just think that right now it's like, all right, I could see a repeat happening between Kansas City and Tampa. Like, but everyone else is flip a coin any week. I don't know.
Yeah,
the Packers.
I know what's going to happen when they get to the NFC Championship game. We've been here so many times with them. It just feels like, sure, maybe. I don't know. Like, can you rely on someone besides Devontae to make a play? Like, when you really need it? Like, can Rodgers trust anyone else to make that play? Like, that's what I worry about. Like, and if they draw, like, if they get a tough defense, I would have to see like the NFC, like how it's shaping up. But like, I could see Dallas bumping Green Bay with Parsons and who's the other one? I'm sorry, the cornerback name escaped me right
Diggs,
now.
Trayvon Diggs.
If they can get Green Bay, I could see them knocking them off.
No, I mean, this feels like one of those years where you're going to get kind of maybe like it's going to take one upset in the AFC at least for this thing to open up like just right. A wide open field. And to your point, too, I could see an upset coming out of the NFC, too, because there's like 3 or 4 teams that I would not be stunned if they wind up representing the NFC in the Super Bowl either.
So here's the thing with the Packers, though. So 4 of the top 10 defenses are NFC defenses. 2 of them probably aren't going to make the playoffs in New Orleans and Seattle. Another's Arizona, who's in a massive free fall.
Again.
I don't know that look, you're not wrong. You're going off of history, and you're right. I don't know that there is that defense. I also just think Rodgers has that FU thing going this year where I almost think he thinks he can stick it to the Packers by winning a Super Bowl and leaving
and
because of how much
out.
It would embarrass them. I just think he's got something different about him this year. And we say that every year, and then they lose. So I might be wrong, but I like the Packers. The one thing I'll say about the Dolphins, too, just to go back to that, and they have issues. I get not totally believing in Tua, all of that. They do have one of the best coaches, I think, in the AFC. I really am a strong believer in what Brian Flores does. You know, you look at some of those other teams at the bottom of the AFC, the Broncos, Vic Fangio, the Browns, Kevin Stefanski. Like, I don't believe in those guys. Those guys, to me, don't stand out, don't make that kind of difference. I think Brian Flores makes a big difference.
Aaron's big year. showing feet on webcams and throwing TDs. Gross. It's gross.
617-779-0985. I promise we get to some of your phone calls. Let's knock some out right now. Let's go talk to Jonathan and Drake. Jonathan.
Hi, how's it going?
Hey.
I was thinking about the Patriots game on Sunday, how frustrating it was to watch. And I feel like we've had the same frustration since the last year that Brady played, of just not having the big play guy. I mean, it could be a good thing that you have all these average guys that the defense, the opposing defense doesn't say like, oh, well, we know we have to double cover this guy. But when you're down two scores, you know, you can only put so much on the rookie quarterback, but, you know, you don't have that guy that can consistently get open. I think that's frustrating. I wonder if they'll try to rectify that next year, or if you think one of these guys we have now is going to develop a little better. We know it's not going to be N'Keal Harry, so who is it going to be?
I think it is interesting when he talks about, like, look, when you're playing from behind, you're not exactly putting your rookie quarterback, who I think has exceeded all of our expectations coming into this year, but not exactly putting him in a position to be successful when you're coming out playing flat like you have been over the last couple games, at least in the first quarter, and then having to put it on his shoulders a lot. In terms of the weapons that they have offensively, do you think it's a year? I mean, Barth, you've been kind of, you know, hammering this in terms of this kind of being a preseason year and Everyone kind of getting a feel for the offense in-house. Do you think it's a situation where they have the pieces right now, where they're going to be able to take that next step next year? Or do they really need to identify that go-to guy and acquire him this offseason?
So we kind of talked about this in the last segment. I think maybe Kendrick Bourne. Like, if somebody in the building is going to emerge into that, you know, game breaker, I think it's Kendrick Bourne. I just really like what he's done this year. He's electric with the ball in his hands. He's visibly gotten better from week one to this point. He's clearly bought in all of that. Are there physical limitations there? He's going to hit a ceiling at some point, obviously, but I really like what I've seen from him. I think they totally found a player in him. If he doesn't get to that game breaker level, I think I have that as their third biggest need right now, third or fourth, depending on what happens with Dont'a Hightower, Devin McCourty, if they come back. But I think tackle and corner needs one and two. And you could argue that either way. If you want to put either one at the top, I wouldn't disagree with you. And then I think you have, again, depending on Hightower, McCourty, I think you have middle linebacker. I think you have deep safety. And I think you have game breaker, whether it's a receiver, a tight end, a running back, however you want to do it. I think that is kind of that second tier need right now. Still big. But, you know, as we've talked about, if you can't block for Mac Jones, game breaker can't get the ball in his hands. It doesn't matter. And you can't go punch for punch with elite teams without, you know, they need somebody on the other side of J.C. Jackson. They just do. They never replaced Jason McCourty when he left. Forget Stephon Gilmore. They never replaced Jason McCourty when he left. He played 65% of the snaps as their third corner. They can't play the defense the way they necessarily want to because they don't have the depth for it. They need another corner. They need a tackle. And then, yeah, you get into that game breaker. And I think they can add him. I think the path is there. It's easier said than done. But I do think they're going to have an opportunity to add somebody like that.
Yeah, I thought when Jonathan was saying it was reminding him of the last Brady year, I thought he was going to mention the defense kind of folding a little bit here down the stretch. And I think the biggest thing that the Patriots need right now is when you talk about the lack of a game breaker, you talk about what the offense needs to do. The offense is at its best when they're eating clock, right? And it's smash mouth football.
Yep.
And you have Stevenson and you have Harris and you're going back and forth. And okay, we're pounding you with that. And now here comes some short passes here to Myers or Bourne or whoever, right? Or Hunter Henry. So when the offense can't do that because they're chasing the game, they need to get quick scores. That really doesn't play to their strengths. So, and that's when you talk about defense, some of the older players, you know, McCourty, Hightower, even Collins and Van Noy, they're not exactly, you know, spring chickens here. So I think that's a big thing that you need to sort of have. You need that offense to play at smash mouth football because of the lack of game breakers that we're talking about right now. So if you can't do that and you fall behind early like they have against Indy and Buffalo, it makes it harder for the whole mix to kind of go together.
Yeah, I want to get into the defense on the other side here because it's an interesting point that you just brought up there too, Ty. And is the age starting to play a factor as we come down the stretch here this regular season? We'll do that after Hub Headlines from Alex Barr.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
And
that's got to be a soul-killing exercise.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back here, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Tim McCone, Ty Anderson, Alex Barth in for Toucher and Rich on this Tuesday. Let's go back to the calls here quickly. Let's talk to Paulie in the truck. Paulie.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing okay. I get some decent ideas, I think, here. I got my opinion on who the Pats team. I got three players there. And the three players I'd like to see on the Bruins. For starters with the Pats, we need a real left tackle first and foremost, as Isaiah Wynn is kicked inside the left guard, his natural position. That'll really strengthen the left side of that line to no degree. We also need the next Ted Johnson in the middle and a good slot receiver. And that rounds it up for the Patriots. Now, I get some, with you being in Ian, Ian Anderson, I got some ideas for the Bruins.
I want to hear
them. I'm sure you've As I'm sure you know, I believe that we need to clear enough salary cap room space to bring back Johnny Gaudreau. That'd be like having Brad Marchand have his partner in crime. It'd be like having two of them, and he's even better than Marchand. And you need to clear a cap, and also and part of that clearing cap, you can kill two birds with one stone by bringing Rask back at a lesser number than you're paying Ullman while you deal Ullman to unload his salary. And, of course, David Krejci. Well, if you could bring Krejci back, too. Tell him, hey, listen, when Johnny's coming in, you got to come in at a cap-friendly number. You know, Tuca's coming back. We're going for it. You know, Bergie's staying. This is what the team needs to do. You'll have Taylor Hall. You'll have a bunch of guys. Charlie Coyle will really get it revved up seeing that. A lot of guys that have maybe you know, not playing as well. We'll be pumped up seeing that sort of action at the front office. If we can get it to put it together like that, that would be great.
All right, Paulie, there you go. Ty, so instant reaction.
There's a couple logistic problems with the idea, right? Like, I love the idea of adding more scoring. They need another dynamic scorer, whether it's at center on the wing, you know, Krejci, Gaudreau, like that. That totally works. The problem with Krejci is that he would actually have to clear waivers now if he signs with the Bruins, because he played a game in the Czech League after December 15th. So any contract he signs with the Bruins now, he has to go through waivers. My understanding is that there are teams who will claim him, even if he won't report, because they don't want him going back.
Just
to
block him to going back to Boston.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's been a strength of the Bruins for so long that there are teams that are behind the Bruins who think the Bruins are vulnerable, and they're going to block it if they can. So that's one of the problems there. Because I agree, Krejci, I mean, they miss him so much. Taylor Hall misses him. Craig Smith misses him. They all miss David Krejci. And with Ullmark, the problem is he has a full no move right now. He just closed on a house. I can't see him waiving it. I know that players, when they're asked to move, to waive their no move, if they don't feel wanted, they'll typically waive it. But I think that right now it's probably a little too early for him to do that. You may have to wait until year three, I believe, is when the no trade expands to, I want to say, 5 or 10 teams. So they're all great ideas. It's just logistically, I don't know if they can pull them off this year, right? So that might be down the road, but that's a problem, right? Because they're a win-now team with Marchand getting older,
yeah,
with Bergeron getting older. You know, like, the contracts, they're going to need more contracts here. Pastrnak's up soon. McAvoy jumps to $9 million plus next year. So they got some movement. They got to do something here. But I agree with Paulie that center is a huge need for this team. And another scorer on the wing can do a lot of damage for this team, I think, when they really, really, really need chance creation, scoring some goals, all that.
So I don't know how the NHL waiver system works entirely, but... And I'm just spitballing here. could the Bruins, like if Krejci wanted to come back and a team claims him, could the Bruins then trade for him?
They could, but you know, that defeats the whole purpose of like the, okay, he's signing for cheap money, you know, because a team could say, oh, we want a first round pick. And you're like, ah, do we really want to do that? You know, like that. So like, that's the problem. Because you could, like, he could tell teams are not going to report, and they'll go, okay, we'll move you to our inactive list. That's well, so okay.
I guess I mean more, could they, like, maybe work out a deal with the team at the top of the waiver order? Like, hey, you claim him, and we'll give you, I don't know, a mid-round pick, and then some bad team just gets basically a free draft pick to help make sure the Bruins get Krejci. Again, I don't know if this is how it works. I'm just asking.
Yeah, I would have to go delve into, like, the full CBA to see, like, what the rules are on that. But ultimately, he's going to require waivers, and if you can't work out that deal, I don't think he gets to you, because I know there are teams that would block the Bruins because they want to beat the Bruins. They feel like Boston's vulnerable for the first time in a long time. So they want to take advantage of that. So I wish it happened. I think there's a chance that Krejci's back next year if Bergeron retires. That's kind of like my sneaky thought in my head, is that if Bergeron's gone, he's like, oh, I'll take that spot between Marchand and Pastrnak. Why wouldn't I want that? So we'll see, but I just don't see it happening this year.
98.5thesportshub.com. Ty, you have some awesome stuff on the Bruins. If you're a Bruins fan, you absolutely should be following along there. You provided an update on Tuukka Rask a few days ago. Can you just kind of let us and fill us in on where things stand with Tuukka and potentially coming back for Boston?
Yeah, so he's just a few weeks away from being ready to go. Probably about 3 weeks away now from being 100%. The timeline, probably a little bit ahead of schedule versus where the Bruins thought. I mean, you kind of heard February, right? Like, I had a feeling he was going to play for Finland and then decide what he was going to do.
Yeah.
It just seemed like to make the most sense. But it sounds like he's ready. He wants to be here. He's going to sign for cheap money. And I think the Bruins are looking at it like, okay, we can use that. Like, the Bruins are not in a position right now to turn away help of any sort, whether it's at forward, defense, goaltending. If a guy wants to come back for league minimum and help be a part of your roster, I mean, you're going to take that. Now, it does come with a minus. Jeremy Swayman will probably go to the minors. But I ultimately think, and I've said this for a while now, I think the Bruins are going to need all three goaltenders down the stretch. They have a ridiculous ending to their season. Like, they have, I think it's, I want to say it's like 35 games in 61 days. It's just something insane like that.
Yeah.
Ullmark has had injury history in Buffalo. Swayman has never played in the 82-game season. They may very well need all three goaltenders. And I think that if you can have a three-headed monster, basically, with Rask, Ullmark, and Swayman, instead of Ullmark, Swayman, and Kaiser or Grossneck, whoever's in Providence, you're going to take that, right? So I think that there's a handshake agreement in place. Tuukka will be back, and it's just a matter of when.
And, you know, whatever it was you said, 31 and 65, that's before they reschedule all these games.
Exactly.
That's before they put all these games back
point.
In. I think, honestly, and I kind of get why they didn't do it this year. I thought one of the best things the NBA and NHL did last year was scheduling the first half of the season and then scheduling the second half of the season once the first half of the season was done. I guess you couldn't predict Omicron, but boy, does it look like the NHL should have done that right now, right? Because the Bruins, I mean, they're going to be playing split squad doubleheaders by the time this thing is said and done.
Good I mean, basically, right? Like you have six games to make up right now because of the postponements this month. And you have, I believe, 16 days that they've added to the schedule by not going to the Olympics. So it doesn't really help your pacing issue, right? Like, you still have to make up six games in 16 days and then go on that death march that I mentioned where you're averaging a game less than every 2 days. I mean, so
they played three games in the first month.
Yeah, which is just ridiculous. That why wouldn't you front load a schedule when you know that you have makeup dates possible? Like, that remains one of the silliest things I've ever seen. This is the worst schedule ever, but that's neither here nor there. You know, you got to do what you got to do. But I think ultimately that's why they may need three goaltenders, because I don't know if Ullmark can hold up, and I don't know if Swayman can hold up. I've talked to players who, when they jump from the NCAA to the NHL, they say, man, by game 50, you're feeling it. Like, you are you are struggling, right? And goaltender may be a little bit different, but what if it's not, right? And what if you need help? Getting a guy like Tuukka who wants to play for almost nothing, like, that's good.
And just to go back to, you know, Paulie's call and his thoughts on the Patriots real quick, one thing I do, he did bring up something interesting, because I've heard this a lot. The idea of moving Isaiah Wynn to guard, I, for the life of me, have no idea where that came from. I hear it all the time. And he played guard one game as a sophomore at Georgia and he's been a tackle besides that, the issues he has at tackle are going to be worse at guard. Like, his issues at tackle, he's a finesse player. He's not overpowering. Look at the Patriots guards, right? It's Michael Onwenu, it's Ted Karras, it's Shaq Mason. It's these big, physical, just snowplow offensive linemen.
Yeah.
Right. Isaiah Wynn's not a guard, not in this system. Probably not in the NFL, definitely not for the Patriots. I do think they tried to kind of curve with Isaiah Wynn. They generally take those bigger linemen, the Trent Browns. I think they wanted to go more agile, try something different. Did it pan out? He's been good at times. I don't know that he's been a first-round caliber player. He's going to be a very attractive trade piece in the offseason because there are teams, I think, who would view him as a starting caliber left tackle. I think he's a top 32 left tackle in the league. The injuries don't help, but he's only going to make $10 million on that rookie option. He's just not a scheme fit. That's part of what's hurting him. I think he's a really attractive trade option. I think you can get a decent pick. They're not going to get a first-round pick, but I think you can get a decent pick for him, kind of like they did with Sony Michel last year. And then you go out, there's some big tackles in this draft, and they can go and get a guy that is more their speed, or, you know, for lack of a better word, is more their style.
You brought up his injury history. I want to get into another former Patriots draft pick that's dealing with it as well right now, and we look back at kind of what we thought this player could potentially be and what it's turned out to be as well. We'll get into that on the other side. It's Tim McCone, Ty Anderson, Alex Barth here with you in for Touch on Radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Talking about the game is no game.
You were listening, you were enjoying the talk.
Toucher and Rich.
That's wordplay, my friends.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, Barth, you brought up the injuries about Isaiah Wynn last segment, and I thought it segued nicely into the news we got last night about another former Patriot, and that's Jimmy Garoppolo. Banged up again, suffered a what Schefter is saying is a torn UCL of the right thumb.
I thought UCL was elbow.
I wish I could tell you. Weekend headlines guy, not a doctor. UCL of the right thumb, as well as a fracture in the same thumb early in Thursday's loss to the Titans. Status now uncertain. Were you a big Jimmy Garoppolo guy back in the day? And where do you stand now?
Yeah, I never saw it. I never saw it. I was never a big, you know, he's the next guy person. I think consistency, and this is across all positions, all sports. I think consistency is the most underrated trait in sports. We like to talk about how fast a guy is, how strong a guy is, you know, how high he can jump. And I'm just using physical traits because they apply to all four sports. How good of a shooter somebody is, you know, how well they can catch, blah, 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 you know, at their peak. What can they do consistently? I think that gets left out a ton. And Jimmy Garoppolo is not exactly consistent when he's on the field. And I think reliability is another important trait we don't take into account enough. And I'll give you a number here on Jimmy Garoppolo. Games he's supposed to start in his career. So what I mean by that is, the four games in New England when Tom Brady was suspended, the five games, like, I'm not counting when he first got traded to San Francisco because they said they were going to bench him, but the five games at the end of that season after they named him the starter, and then 16 games per year since, and then however many games it is this year, right? Jimmy Garoppolo should have started at this point 73 games in his career. He started 46. That's 63%. And by the way, he hasn't finished a number of those games. When you talk about games where he's actually on the field at the end of the game, it's closer to 50%. This year is only the second time in his career he started more than five games. He's 30 years old. So how can you build? You have to build around your quarterback. You have to. That's how the NFL works. How can you build around a guy when you don't know if he's going to be on the field? And that's my problem. And you couldn't have known he was going to have these injury problems in New England. But again, it was inconsistency, which is tough to build around to begin with. And now it turns out the guy can't stay on the field. People were mad that the Patriots only got a second-round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo. They fleeced the 49ers. They turned around and used the pick on Duke Dawson. But they fleeced the 49ers in that trade.
Your thumb does have a UCL, by the way.
Okay.
Nailed it.
It's my commentary.
No, I just look at Jimmy G and Barth, to your point, it felt like some of this stuff was kind of fluky. Like, you go back to the injury when he was against the Dolphins and he lands the wrong way. And then, you know, you go down with the ACL. And so, yeah, you know, you can kind of explain some of that stuff away. But eventually, like, it just gets to the point where, yeah, availability is clearly an issue. Those stats about, by the way, versus games he should have been starting or had the ability to start and then actually did start is pretty much all you need to know. I'm kind of with you. Like, I think we spent a lot of time talking about, oh, yeah, you had a guy in place to transition to from Brady. I'm not sure Jimmy G ultimately was that guy that you could have built around long term and had a legitimate contender here for, you know, the 10 to 15 years that you're looking for.
I mean, I'll say this. When we were talking about it this offseason, right, you know, are they going to sign somebody, blah, 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 everybody was high on Jimmy. I would have taken Brissett. And I don't know that Brissett is quite the quarterback Garoppolo is, but I think it's close. And it's a matter of, do you want 16 or 17 games of Jacoby Brissett? Or do you want 10 games of Jimmy Garoppolo and then another 7 games of whoever Jimmy Garoppolo's backup is? Is it Stidham? Is it Hoyer? Whoever. That's how you have to look at this guy. And it's not a realistic way to build a team. And by the way, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, people might come at me saying I'm underrating him, whatever. This isn't me. I'm not the only one believing this. You know who else believes Jimmy Garoppolo isn't a starting NFL quarterback? The San Francisco 49ers.
As you say, the team that just spent, two first-round picks?
Right. You don't give up 3 first-round picks if you think the guy you have is a starting caliber quarterback, even with the injuries, by the way. If he's that good, you ride it out. You try to figure out a way to keep him healthy. You use those picks to draft offensive linemen and keep him healthy. The Niners told us this spring, Jimmy Garoppolo is not a starting caliber NFL quarterback in their eyes, and they look closer at him than anybody else.
You can't be handsome and elite. I mean, Tom
Brady's
the
only
guy.
I know one guy who did it.
That's the only one. That's why he's a true unicorn. You just can't do it. You can't be handsome and durable.
I'm going through the league in my head now to see if I can come up with something. But yeah, you might be right about that.
It's an oxymoron.
Yeah.
You can't do it.
Yeah.
They run against each other. Ugly people are tough. You look at any ugly person, like, oh, I don't want to fight them. Any ugly person is really tough. What's my excuse? Don't know. I have no idea.
Ofer, yeah, I'm kind of with you in that camp, too. Very soft, not bringing a lot to the table in the looks
department.
It rains.
I'm like, I don't want to go outside.
Yeah, we're good. Yeah, I'll zoom. Yeah. All right. Yeah, interesting stuff. I just think the Jimmy G thing is fascinating. Again, like, you know, like you said, there was a lot of talk, Barth, about potentially bringing him back and maybe him being the answer for the Patriots. And, yeah, I don't think that was ever going to be the solution here. I'm not sure how interested the Patriots were in general in doing that, but you look at it now, and if you've got a 30-year-old quarterback that can't stay on the field, has a proven track record now of not being able to stay healthy throughout a season, I'm not sure how you can build around it. And you're right. The Niners, more than willing to move on at this point from Jimmy G, so that kind of tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, and ultimately, he's pretty comparable to Mac Jones. But the difference is Mac Jones, to this point, has been durable. He doesn't cost whatever it is, $30 million, whatever Garoppolo costs, and he's significantly younger. So, you know, best of both worlds. And I bet we're going to hear a lot this offseason of Jimmy coming back as the backup, and that ultimately might not be the worst idea, but they dodged, because there was the report out there, right, that they were interested in him and San Francisco's price was just too high. I think they dodged a bullet. I think they absolutely nailed it not bringing him back.
617-779-0985 is the telephone number. It's Tim McCone, Ty Anderson, Alex Barth here. 90 seconds and back to your phone calls.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.